Chapter 34. Virginia. Remember Earth. My sovereign, stand by for a tight beam with the Archimedes. If the enemy attempts to intercept the beam, we will have limited warning. My techs inform me. I run my hands through my hair. Sitting in my stateroom in the Deja Thoris, I feel more nervous than when I stood before Valdir the Unshorn. I understand. Cut the beam when you need to. We can't risk compromising their coordinates. My ship waits in the queue down to Mars. The enemy thinks we're merely being cautious, arranging our capital ships over the descending transports to protect them. In fact, they would laugh if they knew our real intentions. They will when they learn. Our best hope is they laugh themselves to death. I took a souvenir from Phobos before I left. A menu from a civilian eatery at the spaceport. I don't know why. Maybe because it felt like the Republic retreating from Phobos was the last moment of a dying age. I wanted a relic for what was and will never be again. I banished defeat from my mind and browsed the menu. One of the entries makes me smile. Ragnar's Vast Hunger, an ice cream dessert slathered with fudge, peanut butter, walnuts, cherries, and bananas that is claimed to be so large only the legend himself could eat it in one sitting. If you can match the famed hero's appetite, the dish is apparently free. Then my husband's face appears on the viewscreen above the menu, and I stare at him like he is the first man I've ever seen. It doesn't feel that long ago that I sat atop my horse, looking down at two young men by a lock at the Institute. There was Cassius, as distracting a man as has ever been made, but he was so used to drawing all eyes to him that he needed to be witnessed to spark. Then there was the other man, the Dark One, not in features, but dark in his energy. There was a man who needed no witnesses to burn. His energy was igneous and parthenogenetic, fire reproduced of itself. At first glance, I knew he was a powerful being with no manners, no airs, no grace, only a direction. One that ran straight through me. It wasn't love that awoke in me. It was fear. But that is a part of love. It took time for me to see the sensitive being hidden behind his iron walls. It takes no time today. I don't even see what his trials have done to him. Those are details. I see his energy. It is not as dark as I remember. His eyes are soft, yearning, and do all but reach out across the void and embrace me.
Hello, Mustang.
His masculine voice stirs up the silt of love, and the part of me that's been dormant since he left awakens.
Hello, Reaper, I whisper.
Still, a shield lies between us, held by both parties. Either of us could be a program, an enemy ruse.
Our boy, he asks before our prearranged test.
I find that touching. He couldn't wait. Alive, I say. He looks down, overwhelmed with emotion.
When was he made? Confirm.
After your first reign, I answer, along with a numerical code. What was waiting for us after our fun? Confirm. He gives a code in return and smiles at the memory.
Applause, innuendo. Breakfast, bacon, and friends.
Applause, you wish. I force a laugh. It is, Darrow. I feel out of my body, unable to find the words. Where are you? I sound so young, so fragile.
With Cassius and Severo and the Archimedes.
Alive. Kavax, too. And your mother, and your friends made at home, Char, Screw, Thraxa, Harnassus. Each name is a joy to him.
I'm days out from home at full torch. We can see Phobos on our scopes. How bad is it?
You're not running full torch, are you? I ask,
No, we've come this far, but we can if we need to. Virginia.
How bad is it? All we can see are debris. Did they make landfall on the planet?
No, no landfall. Did we lose Phobos?
Yes. We've only just completed the evacuation.
His frown is like one you'd see on a statue outside a military academy. A commander surveying the enemy formation and thinking, thinking.
But there's no energy wash, no shooting.
I was so angry at his departure, I'd nearly forgotten how comforting he is as a confidant. No judgment, no bullshit, just boundless competency. Some people shirk problems. Some fumble them or pull at them like Gordian knots. Darrow asks questions, finds the nerve center, and then drives a spear into it. His only true strategic fault is that very same unwavering aggression. I don't soften the truth. I surrendered the moon to Loon in exchange for a peaceful transfer.
When?
5 days ago. It took time.
If only we hadn't taken the ecliptic plane back to Mars.
He sags his head. The comment is so flagrantly vain it makes me furious at him. It breaks the spell his appearance cast over me. He'd what? Wave his hands and send a plague of boils on the enemy, a wave of floods to wash them out of the sectors? But I pause before I rebuke him. Just by the tone of voice I can tell he is not the man who left. He is older, his trials etched into his features. His crow's feet and forehead lines are now deep grooves. He is thinner, wearier, and concealing at least 5 injuries. He's encountered radiation, and his hair has only started growing back. He has a beard, a terrible, hairy beard. But the change I sense runs deeper than the physical. His restless anxiety has not gone, but it is muffled by a solemn maturity. Nothing grants wisdom like loss. Do you think I made a mistake? I ask. He considers.
I honestly won't know until I better understand the tactical situation. I will need a full report from your praetors when I get back.
The more I look at him, the more my doubts compound. Darrow, they know you're out there. They know you're in a cloaked ship. Lysander lived on the Archimedes for 10 years. The closer you come home, the more their patrols will tighten. They're on their telescopes. They may not sense you, but your ship isn't invisible. They will catch you.
Then come get me,
he says, as if it was so easy.
Sally out with the fleet. Victor could run the op easy enough.
I sigh at my inability to describe the battle and violence I've witnessed. Finally, I feel like he must have felt for so many years. Words will never do justice to the menace we survived. The intensity of emotions, or the cost of seeing so much destruction. So many things have happened, I don't even see the purpose in relating. Apollonius, the shit tube, the nucleus, Valdir. Darrow, we can't. We have to ground our ships. He flinches. It is not the glamorous strategy, but it is my strategy. They almost destroyed our navy. Half our fleet is gone, and we don't have the repair yards anymore. Even if we did, I realize I wouldn't send them. How do I tell them it's not just the difficulty of getting through the enemy fleet that stays my hand? He doesn't understand the level of faith people have in his return. They believe that it will be enough that he just arrives back on the planet. But I remember the sea of faces outside Lycos, the way they spoke the other names after Diana, but had to shout his. They shout his name to invoke his power. Mars needs its savior back. But I look at Darrow, and I don't see a savior. I see an exhausted, bearded survivor stumbling home without the ships or the men to turn the tide. He gets back, then what? He's trapped inside the gold siege like the rest of us. The tactical risk is just not worth the strategic reward or cost. We need him on the outside.
Pax's words in the snow come back to haunt me. Quicksilver will listen to only one man, and he's here, looking at me.
No, Darrow murmurs.
He's read my expression.
Virginia, I'm only 4 days away.
Darrow, I take a breath. It hurts so much to say what I need to say. Darrow, I want nothing more than for you to be home, for us to face this together, to see you and Pax in the same room. But you can't come home. Not yet. The words are like a bullet. Once they've left the barrel of my mouth, I cannot take them back. Nor would I. They are true. He falls silent. I fear facing down the tidal wave of emotion that he'll release. I fear he'll just ignore me, do what his passions tell him. Eventually he asks,
"Why not?"
"You've been out of this war for over half a year. There isn't time to catch you up. I can send a packet to do that, especially with your obsidians, Sephi. So much has happened. You have to trust me to know what Mars needs, because the longer we debate, the greater the chance they'll find you. If they find you, they will catch you. Kill you. That would break Mars. That would break me. I couldn't take that. Not after all this."
"I didn't come all this way just to sail past you," he growls.
"Did you come all this way to die?
Virginia,
to hold my hand as I die? That's what will happen." "Darrow, my love, if you've ever trusted me, trust me now. The enemy wants you to return. They want us all in one place so they can exterminate us. If you come here, all you can do is wait for them to attack. If you are out there, you can work on the problem. You can build strength. Then when the time is right, you can combine it with ours. With our ships inside the planetary shields, Mars will be a fortress, wreathed with death and teeth. We will hold the planet. We will stave off defeat. I will not let Mars fall. But it's up to you to find us a path to victory." He wants to say I let Phobos fall. I can feel it. Or maybe I believe I feel it because I hold as much faith in him as all the others do. That in my place he somehow would have conjured a terrible miracle and sent the enemy into flight. He does not reply. "Darrow, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. The hardest thing..." My voice breaks. I fight back the tears. "Every morning you are my first thought. Maybe news has come as I slept. Maybe you've just landed in Aegea." I can't keep the strain from my voice. "But we need you out there, beyond their siege line, until you can return at the head of an armada."
"There is no armada."
"What if there were?" He ignores that and looks at me with so much pain I nearly recant all I've said. To travel so far, only to be turned away now, not by a scorned god or a twist of fate, but by his wife.
"There has to be another way."
"If there were, do you think I would ask this of you?" His eyes fall to his hands, as if they were to blame for the distance and years between us.
"You told me not to go. When I left Luna, I should have listened. I just wanted to end it all."
"I know.
I thought one last push would see us through. Numb myself, put it all on me, get it done. Then we'd get to live the life we'd promised ourselves. Experience the future we wanted Pax to have. I know that was silly."
"It wasn't silly. Reality is just more stubborn even than you." He takes a long, deep breath.
"You know what I told myself out there, each time my mistakes compounded? I'd say, 'Darrow, next time you listen to Virginia, you jackass. If you get so lucky to see her again, you listen to her as you should have all along. I'm not saying you're always right, but I know I tend to shut down, sometimes for years. That's not right. It's not. The path I want to walk anymore. It's lonely, and we've always been stronger together. After all, we made our tribe together. We made packs together. He grins, lopsided with a devil's sheen in his eyes. I don't care that he's putting it on for show. I don't care that he's not coming back with the victory he promised. He may have lost on Mercury, but he's conquered the worst part of himself, his intransigence. Nothing makes wisdom like true loss, it seems. So, since time's of the essence, you should give me your orders, my sovereign.